Excellent.
Well, it's 2 minutes early, so why don't we get started? Welcome to Dev 332. And I literally did try for the very longest possible name of a session in TechEd this year. That was my prerogative. I think I've beaten everybody. Three full lines, and I had to pull the text size down about 5 points to, or 10 points to get it in there. Building modern light, HTML5, best, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we're going to talk about Lightswitch. Who here is a Lightswitch user? Who here has heard of Lightswitch? Who can spell light switch? Excellent. Who hasn't got a hand? Okay. All right. So the plan for today is that I'm going to talk about where light switch fits in the scheme of things. And you'll excuse me if I keep taking my glasses on and off. I'm at that stage in my, let's say, advancing years where I can see you if I do this, and I can see the screen if I do this, but it's going to be a lot like that today. So we're going to talk a bit about the business applications for today. That's going to be some slideware. I'm going to take you for a lap around the Lightswitch tools, particularly the new stuff in the Visual Studio 2013 preview. I'm going to take it to, and then we're going to try and add some bits to it that actually make a Lightswitch application usable. And then I'm going to look at what's kind of coming up next, because the stuff I'm going to show you today is only the bits that's in the preview, and there's more to come. There's more to come. So that's kind of the plan. Hopefully the green bits, the demo bits in the middle, will take up most of the time. And you'll have to listen to me talking about the screen, the stuff on the screen a whole lot less. But I do want to start with a bit of a thought about business applications today. He said, clicking forward on the clicker and nothing happening. One of the things, well, we're definitely seeing a change in the way people think of business applications. Traditionally, when we thought of business applications, we thought of line of business applications with people doing heads-down data entry. They're being very, very productive by not looking at the screen at all. They don't really care whether that's in two-point or whether they're required to have a particular cathode ray tube to look at it in. That's fine. And that's the way business applications used to be. They talk to big back-end systems, and people get work done very efficiently. The thing is that nowadays, business is happening lots of places other than just in the office. People are out and about doing business things all the time. And so having a business application that you can take with you on whatever device you're on, wherever you happen to be, whenever you happen to be there, is really, really important. It's no longer a matter of someone being stuck at a desk. In fact, some people haven't even got their own desk anymore. Who's like that at the moment? Hasn't got their own desk. I go to work now and I choose one. I choose a desk somewhere. Which is a fun thing to do, because sometimes you get the window seat and sometimes you don't. You never get to keep anything on your desk, and most of the time I work from home, because that's heaps easier, because that's where I know where my stuff is. But it does mean that my business applications need to be available to me in a number of different forms, a number of different guises. And there's a few things to that. One is the concept of ubiquitous connectivity to my corporate resources. I'm not going to talk about that today very much. We'll talk a little bit about it in the context of SharePoint. But that's kind of the backbone of it. And if you've gone to any of the sessions on direct access, if you've gone to any of the sessions on the enhanced VPN and those sorts of things, then you'll know what I'm talking about there with this ubiquitous connectivity. Or you'll go through some other mechanism for doing that, like SharePoint. So we'll get to that in a minute. We need to be able to find our apps in different ways. No longer is it okay to have to go to a corporate share somewhere and double-click on some MSI file or some .exe file to install stuff, or have stuff pushed out by group policy even necessarily, because we want to be able to get at these applications. Guys, there are heaps of chairs, by the way, if you don't want to be sitting at the back. There's things down the front here. Don't feel like you have to stand up for an hour and a quarter. There's a whole lot of new ways of getting at things. We're discovering them in the store, going to a web page and just clicking on the application. Corporate credentials traveling with you and all sorts of ways, being passed through to applications automatically, being able to sign in a single place and have those credentials recognized and the claims that those credentials represent passed through. That's all really key to the modern business application. And as I said, we've got these new ways of doing work. Lots of the time, business applications need to be mobile. You think about sort of things that used to happen on pen and paper. A great example is a traveling sales rep might be out and visiting stores. And when they get to a store, they want to take they want to do inventory of what's there. That B, they might want to do some reporting on the state of the display, all those sorts of things. That the C, they might want to look up stock levels. All that kind of stuff needs to be able to happen on the fly. Whereas what used to happen is that rep used to go and take notes on a bit of paper. They were very proud of their calfskin, you know, folio that they could open up with their expensive Montblanc pen and look really impressive with their you know, $300 suits and all that kind of stuff. But that's changing now. And these things need to happen in real time. There's no longer any opportunity for people to do this stuff do it synchronously. That needs to happen as you're going. And so these new ways of working mean that we need new ways of surfacing and accessing pretty much the same information as we did before, but we just need new ways of doing it. And so we're seeing lots and lots of mobile apps, whether they're native or whether they're HTML-based apps, where people are expecting that the apps are immediately adapt to whatever device they're on. They're expecting that they can take their application whether they're running on a big wide tablet or whether they're running on their phone, it'll adjust appropriately. And so all of those things need to be taken into account. And really, light switch was always the engine for building business applications very quickly and very efficiently. And now the light switch team with the stuff in Visual Studio 2013 preview of Visual Studio 2013 and subsequently coming up the Visual Studio 2013 itself, we've taken a lot of those learnings that we've had from the previous version, including the HTML client stuff that happened in 2012, and really taken it to the next level. So that'll probably do for that little spiel there. I want to talk a little bit about Office 365 because this is one of the things that we can take into consideration we can use as we go into our as we create our modern business application with all those criteria that we talked about before. The great thing about Office 365 is it's very simple to go in and find whatever apps you need. You can have a home screen on there and away it'll go. You can run it on any device at any time through the HTML-based applications. The nice thing is that users don't really make a distinction between what's an app and what's part of their Office 365 experience or what's part of their SharePoint experience. But they get to use things with which they're familiar, with which they already potentially know how to understand how to interact with, and they don't have to relearn every time they have a new application. So Office 365 makes this very simple to roll out into the cloud as well, with really familiar tools for IT pros and really familiar tools for devs as well. This is a real bonus for us as software developers and as people who are providing modern business applications. So what I want to do now is take maybe 10, maybe 15 minutes to give you a quick lap around what the Visual Studio tools, sorry, the Lightswitch tools look like at the moment in preview. The idea being that for those of you who haven't seen it or played with it, it's probably worth at least getting an idea of the sort of things that are available as part of Visual Studio Lightswitch. Whether it ends up continuing to be called Lightswitch, by the way, is another question. I know the Visual Studio team are interested in feedback around whether it's worth having a separate brand for Lightswitch or whether it's just another part of the Visual Studio continuum. And you'll see a bit why I say that in a moment, because Lightswitch is becoming more and more, well, it is a first-class citizen. So let's have a quick look at that. Got some 7 there. All right, so I've got Visual Studio 2013, the preview coming up here. I'm just going to start a new project. And the first thing I'm going to do is jump in and call it and make sure it's a Lightswitch project. So yeah, this is a standard project type, like any other thing in Visual Studio. The templates are available here. We're going to choose an HTML application, and I'm going to choose to use Visual C#. You don't have to use C#; you can use Visual Basic. Who here is mainly a VB developer? Who is mainly a C# developer? Okay, I think we're going to go with a C#. That's good because that's what I was planning to do anyway. If you'd gone the other way, I would have gone, well, I'm going to show you some C# today, just so you learn some new things. But, you know. All right. So we're going to choose a Lightswitch HTML application. And I'm going to put it in my Keep Forever folder. And we'll dev 332 at you. And we'll create a directory. And I'll make sure I've got LightSwitch HTML. Okay, cool. So away we go, and what you'll see is happening, the project will get created. Okay. Project will get created, and see, there's a few things going on here. LightSwitch still starts with this fantastic exhortation, fantastic instruction, fantastic aspiration. Every application should start with data. Now, I've always said that every application wants to be a data application when it grows up. I've also said that every database application wants to be a geographic database application when it grows up, but that's another session. But what we can do in here is, in our Solution Explorer, I'm not actually going to start with data. I'm going to start by showing you what's going on over here. So I've created this new solution, and it has three projects in it. The first one is the LightSwitch project itself, and it's the one that's called the umbrella project. It defines what's going on with the rest of the LightSwitch stuff, and if you like, it's a connector for all the other things that LightSwitch can do. The second one is a standard web project, a standard ASP.NET web project, which is pretty cool. It's got one extra thing in it, which is some LightSwitch bits here, but other than that, it's pretty much standard. And in fact, if I right-click on here and I manage my NuGet packages, and I'm going to go back out of here so we can see what's going on. There's a whole bunch of stuff already installed. Now, this is a really important thing here because the LightSwitch projects are just standard projects now. Standard web projects, standard other projects. We'll talk about the other projects in a little while. But this gives us the power of all of the things that Visual Studio gives us. Previously, LightSwitch had I'm not going to call it wonky, but had an idiosyncratic way of presenting its project information. It was pretty much its own way of doing things. It had a what we called a logical view and a file view. Things were going on behind the scenes that we kind of tried to hide from users or from developers. This is really interesting because in some ways it made things a whole lot easier. It abstracted away a whole lot of the complexity about what was going on behind the scenes. LightSwitch projects have never been simple, or have never been simplistic, let's put it that way. They've always been fairly complex beasts behind the scenes. They've done a lot of work to rationalize that, by the way, in Visual Studio 2013, which I'm really pleased about. But what we used to do was we used to hide away that complexity, which was great if that's all you had to do was the standard stuff. But if you needed to do things that weren't part of the standard build, and you certainly could do those things, but it was much tougher because you had to go and kind of spelunk through this thing that wasn't really standard or wasn't really well understood. Well, certainly wasn't well understood by most developers. But now we've got a standard project, which means we've got access to all of these things. And here we've got a bunch of jQuery bits. And also, I want to point out this thing, the Microsoft LightSwitch JavaScript runtime, client JavaScript runtime. Now, why is this significant? This is really important because LightSwitch, as we'll see, takes advantage or requires or takes a dependency on a bunch of JavaScript, including jQuery Mobile. So what happens if a new device comes out or there's a new revision of jQuery Mobile? Well, it used to be that you had to wait for a new version of LightSwitch to come out to take advantage of it, but because all of the LightSwitch runtime stuff is now done in a NuGet package as well, that we can rev that as soon as we need to, and we're not waiting for a new LightSwitch package to come out. So that's pretty neat. That makes it really simple to keep up to date with all of the revisions at the speed of the internet as opposed to the speed of the old dev process. So that's pretty neat. I'm quite pleased with that. So that's the HTML client. And you'll see that we've also got a server project. And the server project is still another web project. In this particular case, it's got it's our middle tier, which is, if you like, our engine for doing data validation and then talking to the data back ends. And again, it's a standard web project, so it also has a whole bunch of NuGet packages, including a server side a server-side light switch package. Yeah, that one there. All right. So let's do what it says and start with data. I'm going to create a new table. I'm going to show you through one, creating one table, and then I will switch across to one I've created earlier with a bunch of tables and relations in there, because I don't really want to want you to have to sit through me just typing field names. But let's say we're writing an application to manage job applicants. Yeah, so we need an applicant table, and the applicant might have a given name, which is a string and required, and a family name, which is a string and required. Now, those of you who've done light switch stuff before, you might be tempted to put in something like a full name, which you can certainly still do. And a full name might be a computed field that allows you to, given a given name and a family name, return the actual a concatenated string of what the of what the name is. So this dot given name, this dot family name. So now I have now have another field, but in this particular case, it's a computed field. Now, for those of you who don't know what's going, haven't seen light switch before, what's going on here is I'm defining in the model how to represent the full name of an applicant. I'm not storing that full name anywhere. It's purely a computed field that happens on the fly whenever the model is queried for that name. So in the background, it's creating an entity framework model. The entity framework model, when it's queried for the applicant full name property, it will actually do this computation. Now, it's quite clever, and there's a whole bunch of very smart stuff that goes on behind the scenes that checks whether any of the dependent when any of the field, the actual data fields that, on which this property is dependent, have changed, it will go and do a refresh. Otherwise, it caches it very aggressively. And so it's there's some very, very neat stuff that goes on behind the scenes for this. But LightSwitch is very competent in this. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out now and not talking much about it later on is because at the moment you can't use this field, this computed field, in the HTML version, in the HTML client. You can still in the Silverlight client, but you can't in the HTML client. So as tempted as you may be, if you know how this works, to go and do this thing, and it certainly doesn't hurt for you to do that. You can still get at it through the OData feed that this data source will give you, but the HTML version won't do it for you. And that's mainly to do with a bunch of the requirements for client-side validation or client-side rendition of that, which is written in a different language, of course, because it's JavaScript and not C#, and so it's a much harder thing for them to do on the client side straight away. I have a feeling they're probably still working on that. I'm not going to make any promises about whether it appears in the 2013 release version. Okay. So I can define a name field. This person might have a phone number, which is a phone number type. Now, this is an interesting thing. Storing phone numbers in a database. Did you know that SQL had a phone number type? It doesn't. You're right. So what happens here? Well, again, we're looking at what's going on in the model. The model is going to impose a whole bunch of validation on this particular field before it goes and stores it as a string in the back end. And LightSwitch has got this great concept of business types, which are wrappers around the standard types, the standard back end types, but with all a whole bunch of validation built in. Not just validation either, but a whole bunch of UI that comes along with it. So if I go into the properties for this particular field, I can have a look at what formats this phone number can take. And there are 10 predefined formats for all over the world, as long as you're in Canada or the US. But we can add our own. So Australia is country, area, number, which is the our standard code here. Oops, sorry, our standard code here, And if you like, I can check to see if an Australian number works here. So +612 987 027 19. Oh, it found a format 3. So that actually matched a different number. So what I might do is make sure that the Australian numbers are matched before that, and we'll... there we go. 9870271. Okay, so that it shouldn't be. It shouldn't need it. So let's. Well, let's try this. The plus sign should do this. This worked this morning. So I've just mucked something up. As usual, 612. Okay, all right. I don't know what I've done there. Trust me, you can do these validations. I'm not going to try and debug that on the fly. The nice thing is that's cool. We're doing validation in the UI as part of the at design time, and the UI also has a bunch of stuff at runtime to surface those validation rules and surface those input rules. So let's change this. In fact, instead of doing phone number, we might do web address or blog address. Which might be a web, another type, the web address type. The web address type has got some custom validation we can put in there, but it also automatically prepends an HTTP if you don't put it in there. We won't require a blog address. We might also put their email of contact, which is of type email address. Who's ever written the regex to validate an email address? Yeah? How long was it? Yeah, I'm guessing you didn't actually produce, you didn't actually check all of the cases in the RFC, just guessing, even if you copied and pasted it from somewhere really reputable. But the cool thing is that someone else has written that validation code for you. And so you just say this is an email address and all that validation happens automatically. So that's pretty cool. I can say that I really like this. I can have a default email domain on my email. So I think that's where our next CEO is coming from, Kentoso. That means that all I have to do is, particularly for internal applications, this makes a bunch of sense. You just enter the person's alias and it automatically appends the domain, unless you put one in the actual address. So that's pretty cool. And again, that validation stuff happens at the... at the model level, and also on the client side as well. But it also happens on the model level. And we don't have to write that, but it doesn't. And before it gets stored in the database, all of that stuff goes on. All right. Okay. Will we spell email address properly, just in case? There we go. So that's all very cool. We could add a bunch of other things if we wanted to. I could add another table. That's how you add tables. I will show you one more thing when we get to the other side of this application. I'll go over here now to the one I prepared earlier, which is I think a whole lot more finished. Well, I know a whole lot more finished. Down here we've actually got in our application data. There we go. We've got applicants, interviews, job applications, positions, and staff. Just bring the horse's head back up here. The nice thing about this is that when we have a look at the applicants table, which is what we had before, we've also got the ability to link to other tables through relationships. And relationships are pretty neat because they automatically flow a whole lot of stuff around, including navigation through the system as part of the model. So an applicant might have zero or more job applications. A job application might have a separate cover letter, a link to the applicant, and also a link to a bunch of other tables. And this hierarchy of tables is all represented in the model. And I didn't put it in the other decks. I did this here, but in this particular case, A job applicant can apply for a job application. A position has got a separate table. A staff member is the hiring manager. Staff have got a relationship back to themselves for a hierarchical management system, a self-referential interview. A staff member is going to interview for a particular job application, which an applicant is applying, and then all that, you know, this is a fairly standard sort of relational structure, right? This is the thing you expect to see. So how do we go about representing that in a way that a modern business application makes sense? So let's think about the scenario for a minute where a company is interviewing people, and you go and do the interview. First, you need to find out where you're interviewing and who you're interviewing and get some details, and you might bring that up on your PC or on your tablet. And when you go and do the interview and you're walking back from the interview, you just want to be able to give feedback around hire or no hire. And so you can quickly do that. Or you might, on the way to the interview, you might want to see how that person is progressing through the interview process at the moment, whether they're a hire or a no hire as well. So surfacing that on your phone might make a bunch of sense in that particular case. So let's go across here, and I'm going to show you something that allows me to sort of segue into a very, very cool part of Visual Studio Light Switch. I'm going to press F5 and run this up, and you'll see what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So this is, and I blame the drugs, this is an error I introduced last night into the system. I still haven't tracked down why it's happening, but it does give me a great segue into this particularly cool thing. So I'm going to go into Solution Explorer, and what you might not have noticed in Solution Explorer is that every one of these files has got a little source code icon next to it, because LightSwitch is a first-class citizen of Visual Studio. All of its artifacts are just added into Team Foundation Service, or Server, or wherever it happens to be. Now I happen to have checked this in now to Team Foundation Service. And the cool thing is that I could then go, he said, getting out of there, could then go to here, fire up a brand new virtual machine in Azure from the gallery. Now, if you haven't seen this, then it's one of the coolest things ever, and fire up a dev environment with Visual Studio Ultimate 2013 Preview. And then I've got a development environment machine running in the cloud to which I can connect, and which is not broken in the way that I've managed to break my desktop, my local machine. So I did that earlier. It takes a little while to provision. It took me about 10 minutes last night to provision one of those. Just not too bad when you think about it. I need a new development environment. Okay, 10 minutes, time to go downstairs, take away dinner and come back upstairs and work out how the rest of the demo is going to go. So then I can just connect to it through RDP. I've actually got it here already. And I've got exactly the same applications we had before, but now running up in Azure. Now, I reckon that's pretty cool stuff, yeah? Now, you can do all sorts of, by the way, I'm going to digress just a smidgen here. You can do all sorts of neat stuff with this. You can now turn this VM on and off. Of course, you're not paying for it while it's off. You can save it as an image, as a template image, so that you can have one for every one of your developers. You can make a whole bunch of changes to it. You can join it to domains, all kinds of cool stuff. It comes with a heap of great PowerShell scripts that allow you to do all that. In fact, I installed SharePoint on this machine simply by running a PowerShell script that did all the bits and pieces. Anyone installed SharePoint, the SharePoint developer stuff? Yeah, I'm really, really sorry. Okay, but this makes it heaps, heaps easier, and they've done a great job with all that. So I'd strongly encourage you to look at that. I went and did a week sprint in Singapore a couple of weeks ago, and we ran up these machines for all the devs. And it was a really, really cool way of everyone having a common dev environment really quickly. Yeah, it was very, very cool stuff. And of course, you just RDP straight into it, and you can run it in all sorts of you can run it with all sorts of crazy amounts of memory and cores. So let me just duck back here. If I go in here, which is running at the moment, I'm not going to reconfigure it, but I'll show you this. At the moment, I'm doing that, but if I want to, I could do this. How cool would that be? I'm not going to do it right now because I have never tried doing it while it's running, while I'm running my demos. Not positive what that would do, but it's cool. Yeah, higher charges and fewer free hours, yep. Okay, just checking. But I'll get back out of here before I discard that. But that's pretty neat, right? The fact that you can run up technically known as a honking great server to do your dev work on is pretty nice. All right. So let's go back into here. And this has got the current build of Visual Studio 2013 preview on there. As I say, it's got a whole heap of on the desktop. It's got a whole heap of scripts in a script library. Configuring SharePoint, configuring SharePoint on a domain, configuring SQL Express, and a whole lot of other cool stuff. Oops, sorry. I think Zoomit's better, isn't it? But I don't have Zoomit on this one. Very, very neat, right? And that those PowerShell scripts just run off and do all the things that need to happen, as I said. Very cool. Okay, I do digress, just as mentioned. Okay, so let's see what happens now when we press F5. I've actually made a few more changes to this than we saw before in the Solution Explorer. You'll see that I've got in the HTML client. Oh, I haven't showed you how to add screens, so we might do that just now. So let's we'll do one of those. So let's go and add a new screen, and I want to add a screen for interviews. So an interview, remember, has a job application, which is linked to the applicant, and then also a person who's doing the interview, and then a recommendation from that interview. So let's have a quick look at that. So let's have a look for interviews. We'll call it browse interviews. That'll do. Sure, why not? I'll click OK. So Lightswitch takes me to this lovely. If you haven't seen this this editor for Lightswitch before, then this is the editor for editing screens. Oops. Sorry, try that one more time. That's what I was trying to do. So almost what I was trying to do. Takes you to the editor for editing screens. There we go. This editor gives you pretty much a view and a view model. The view is the thing on the right. The view model is the stuff over here. That's cool. If I want to change this list a little bit or do some other cool things to it, maybe I want to be able to add a new interview. So I can just go into the command bar here and why does it take so long? Well, add a new button that allows me to show add edit interview. Sorry, this is my mouse is doing weird things all of a sudden. Dot selected item. And I'm going to pass in the selected item. Actually, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't have a selected item. I don't want to do that. Sorry. I'm just slightly ahead of myself. What we might do here instead is, if I tap on interview, I can then bring it up. So let's do that instead. So over here, in the tap event, we will add in an interview. Show add edit interview. And now I can say interviews. I didn't need my glasses. Okay. So now when I tap on it, I get that. So that's all we do there. Well, let's run it up and I'll show you what it looks like. We'll go from there. So hopefully I won't get that same dialogue I got before, which is a fun dialogue to see. In fact, what I'll get this time is something else. Let's just take that away. Let's have a look at our applicants. Okay, so we've got a couple of applicants already in the system. me and my kodahi. I can tap on them. I'm just doing this with my finger at the moment, by the way, not with a mouse. Mikey needs a bunch of money. Hire me. I'm good. That's probably much his CV. So that's pretty cool. I can save that. It gets taken back to the sent back to the server. I can tap on his tap on his blog. No, I can tap on his blog. There we go. Fat fingers, and it gets taken to his web page, which he needs to fix. So he's doing really well so far with his first impressions. Going into the user, that is pretty easy to do. Changing the resolution of the screen, by the way, automatically is responsive. Now, what I haven't done here is made these into tiles. I can do that quite easily with a couple of lines of code. But I can also add a new applicant here if I want to. So I don't know. So I haven't written very much code at all. In fact, none other than the bit you saw me write with the full name, which I'm not even using here. And I've got a fairly useful, in terms of functionality, application. I wouldn't say it's beautiful by any stretch of the imagination. And to be honest, if you've got me designing it, it's never going to be beautiful. All right. That's why we have people to do these kinds of things. So here's a great example of that... Of the business type in action. So if I just put blogs.msdn.com/RockyH, you'll notice it automatically prepends an HTTP. Did that for me automatically, and that's what it'll store. I think Rocky's asking for about 1.2 million. Worth every penny. And I brought the goo. All right, so that's Rocky's fault that Scott Guthrie's here. So it's a fairly, that's what else does he need to say in his CV, right? So that's all there now. That's pretty cool, I think, from that point of view. If we have a look at an applicant, let's not look at that. We'll go back here. All of this navigation stuff is taken care of for us. If I show open positions, I can add a new position, maybe senior photocopier. Because we do lots of photocopying nowadays. Position 234, the hiring manager. Brian Madsen is the hiring manager. And we'll save that. And now, if I look at this senior photocopier position, I get a bunch of other information here around who the applicants are, where the applications are as well. Now, I haven't actually enabled that functionality to link stuff yet. But again, that's going to be a fairly straightforward bit of work to do. Now, the nice thing about LightSwitch is that doing all this navigation and linking bits doesn't require any code, but behind the scenes what's going on is really enterprise level capabilities. The Entity Framework, a whole bunch of work going over the wire with OData and so on. So that's a quick lap around, if you like, of the way LightSwitch works with the tools at the moment. I do want to point out one other little thing, so I'll come back in here. Later in my notes that has anyone done any LightSwitch work with and tried to do it in Teams before? Yeah, so you do run into a few problems with LightSwitch in the older versions of Teams because some of the files that are referenced by everybody are actually single monolithic files, and so you get merge conflicts happening with the LSML files. What they've done in Visual Studio 2013 is pulled these things out so they're all separate files, and so there's much less opportunity for these things to conflict when people are working on different parts of the application. And so that's in some ways it looks like a small thing, but in many ways it's a very, very important thing that's gone on there. All right. Pressing the Windows button too many times and not enough times on the minus, the escape button. Okay, so that's cool. That's all I wanted to say about that, I think. Oh, no, there's one more little thing I wanted to show here. The thing about LightSwitch is that it understands about the concept of being part of a bigger picture. It understands about the idea of being part of a wider framework of business applications, and particularly to that end, it likes to go and it wants to be able to go and talk to SharePoint. So if I click this enable SharePoint button here, what will happen is a whole bunch of things will go on behind the scenes to allow cross-domain calls to go back and forth between the Lightswitch front end and SharePoint directly without having to go through the middle tier. So, for example, going and looking up stuff like lists and document libraries can happen through the REST calls directly off to SharePoint. And so I'll, let's quickly flick back to the slides and I'll talk a bit about that. So this is the concept of a Lightswitch application. Previous Lightswitch applications basically didn't have this opportunity to go down to another a different middle tier, for want of a better term. I think that's probably a good way of looking at the SharePoint piece. It really only had the way of going back to whatever its middle tier was, whether it's an Azure website or a locally hosted website or whether the middle tier actually ran on the local client, which was one of the classic two tier application. The concept now is that all of that cross-domain gumph that you need to do to be able to call from JavaScript down into somewhere else is taken care of when you click this enable SharePoint button that I showed you. All of that stuff is set up as links to JavaScript files as part of the home screen, and it now means that you can make REST calls directly down to SharePoint to do things out of JavaScript, which is very, very neat. It means you don't have to go through that back-end tier to do that. You still could if you wanted to. Go back to OData, go and find things from SharePoint through the OData links to the back-end data sources. But, in fact, it makes a bunch more sense to do it this way, and particularly if you're hosting your HTML in SharePoint itself. The last thing you want is to be going all the way back around the world to get back to here. You're coming back down to SharePoint and straight back up through REST calls is very, very neat. And then the client-side docket model for SharePoint can go back and talk to the back end as well if it needs to. And so you've got that two-way communication stuff going on. This is one of the key goals of Lightswitch is to abstract away the repeatable, difficult bump. I think that's a technical term. The stuff that makes our life as developers difficult. Now, often when you see me do presentations, you'll see me do I'll come out the front, so you see me do this, and that's not because I've been indiscreet with the gastro that I had. It's much more that I want someone else to take care of stuff that I don't need to take care of. I want to concentrate on the stuff that I can do really well. I understand the business problem. I understand what needs to happen in terms of validation rules. I understand what needs to happen in terms of where data needs to go. But what I don't want to have to worry about is how data get there, or how the validation's actually taken care of, or whether I've got cross-site domain calls set up properly in my JavaScript. Someone else can do all of that because pretty much it's going to be the same every time with a few tweaks, and the tweaks are usually boilerplate tweaks. So that's what Lightswitch does really, really well. All right. So there's a few things I want to show off here that make things even easier. To here, and we need to go back to here. All right. Now, I'm not sure if you noticed in the application before, but if I zoom in on this particular project, that is a standard SQL Server project. Now this is really nice because, again, remember I said that Lightswitch is a first-class citizen of the Visual Studio world. The cool thing about this is that that I can now go and do all of the things I need to do around source control for my SQL scripts, for my deployment options, for my test data, all within standard Visual Studio project, which gets managed in exactly the same way as all my other projects. So adding a new database project is as simple as right-click on the solution and add new project, the same way as you would in any other Visual Studio project, any other Visual Studio solution. and then you just go to SQL Server, and I'm adding a SQL Server database project. Now, I'm not going to add it because I've already done it, but once you get that there, then you can do things like add scripts. So I can add a new script. And the script might be a post-deployment script, which is what you need to do in Lightswitch if you want to go and muck around with add data and so on in the application as part of the deployment. You need to do it as post-deployment because Lightswitch is the thing that's going to create the database and do all sorts of things. You shouldn't want to do it as pre-deployment because nothing's there to work on, and the model might have different ideas about what gets created when. So if you do it as post-deployment, then you can do stuff like this. And again, I've done it previously because you don't necessarily want to watch me type all this stuff. But you can do quite complex scripts as part of your post-deployment process, where into my applicants I can push a whole bunch of sample data, and it can, you know, it's standard T-SQL, but you certainly don't want to have to repopulate stuff or start importing stuff every time you come into your application. And so being able to do that automatically as part of this process is one of the things that having a database project allows you to do, and that's another great advantage of being a first-class citizen of the Visual Studio world. A couple of other little things I want to show you that make things a whole lot easier. In our interviews table or entity, we might have an interview type. An interview type might be, you know, the tech interview or an HR interview and so on. And one of the ways that you often do this is you say, I've got a choice of a bunch of things that I want to be able to do, and you start typing. But I don't want to type that. I want to have someone else define that or keep it somewhere sensible and be able to just insert it. So one option is I could go and link to another table. We're not going to do that in this particular case. What we're going to do is in here in Excel, I've got a two column selection. I'm going to copy it, and I'm going to go back in here, and I can now just paste it. And boom, all of my choices are there. Now, if you haven't done Lightswitch, then you go, yeah, whatever. If you've done Lightswitch stuff before and particularly played with choice lists, this is the time when you clap. That's neat stuff. Okay, all right. I got excited when I saw it. There's a whole bunch of things you can do in here, like they've done a nice amount of work on this. I can just copy these three rows, for example. Yeah, simple things that make life easier is what Lightswitch is all about. I think that's a great example of one. Okay. So let's look at some of the things we can do to make the application look a little bit better. in the Solution Explorer, and we want to look at our browse staff screen. At the moment, I don't know if you remember, we just saw the last name. It's the only thing that was shown when we saw who the staff were. But what we might want to do instead of that is change that to, we could change it to a tile list, which we actually might do. We'll change it to a tile list. And our rows layout might just have a list of the fields. But in fact, there's a whole lot of stuff we can do in here around in the rows layout. I can add in fact, before we do that, I'm going to change that. Yeah, I'll add a column layout. I'm going to add a new group, which might be a column, set of columns. And the columns, pardon me, might be who the email address and the manager. And so now, sorry, I need to go into here, get the level right. Instead of what we had before, where it just had the single name of the person, I can now get a whole lot more information about the staff member. So let's quickly run that up and have a look at this when we browse staff. So we browse the staff. We've now got tiles. The tiles reflow automatically. At the moment, this this rows layout has got a column layout inside it. So in fact, I've got this the wrong way around. The columns and rows are inverted. I wanted to do it the other way. I wanted to have the person's name, and over here I wanted to have their details about what their email address was and who their manager was. We can do that in a sec. I can add another staff member here, maybe, Anthony Borden. Oops. Now, I'm going to not put the at contoso.com.au in there, so you can see that that gets added automatically. Remember, our application, our validation logic did that. If I were to... If Anthony was a member of the larger organisation, then, and I did put a domain name in there, notice it doesn't override it. So all that validation stuff, which you'd have to write yourself, is now handled for you by Lightswitch. And Anthony reports to Adam Cogan. I'm sure he'd be happy about that. You hear AB? Okay. All right, so... the nice thing about doing this is all of these things are now available for me. So Adam Cogan has direct reports. There's Anthony Borden as the direct report. I can see any interviews he's got scheduled or any open positions he hasn't is looking to fill. None of those happen at the moment. But all of that stuff is taken care of as part of this process. This responsive UI is all taken care of as part of the process as well. You can imagine rendering that on anything from the widest of widescreens through to the narrowest of phones and still getting a very responsive and useful layout. Again, not something you have to worry about doing yourself. Lightswitch takes care of it for you. Okay. So let's go some of the new things that happen at the data level in Lightswitch. One of the nice things you can do now is this concept of filtering. So maybe the job in the where are we in the interviews process? We could write some code that allows us to. Filter against a query method. Now, this is a concept that Lightswitch has had for a while. But basically what it allows you to do is say, I only want to be able... Whenever I want to go and get a list or a query of data in the back end, it provides an extensibility point where it passes you the filter as a link query and allows you to modify that link query or completely replace it. And so you can do a whole lot of stuff in here around... you can only see the... You could say something like filter equals e such that e dot, and then we're in the interviews, so job application dot, and see I can navigate back up the hierarchy, position dot hiring manager dot ID equals whatever. So I could say you only get, you could even say equals application dot current and so on to find out who the user is, dot user, dot etc. Full name. Or whatever, and so I can query has permissions and all sorts of things. This allows me to do really granular level filtering at the row level, and all that's now built into the back end of the system rather than the front. And it always has been built in the back end in Lightswitch, but it happens not at the client side where it can be circumvented, but on the server side, on the business logic side, where that filter gets applied no matter how you get to that position.
Is this like a super filter that applies to any other queries we add to the table?
It actually gets sent in. So when you apply a query, yes. That's right. So any other query you do to the table, any time you need to get at this data source, through the model. Now, you're obviously not going to work when you go back directly to the database because that happens at the model level. But any time you go back to the data source through this, that filter will get applied, and it won't allow you to pull data in that don't meet this filter. Okay. All right. So, what time have we got? 10:40. All right. Notice there's a few things in here that aren't in the old version in the previous version of Lightswitch. We have this concept of different views of the same model, of the same backend. So this is the server view of this entity, but it's also an HTML client view of this entity, which is what's used for doing the client side work. Notice that doesn't have the server side in interviews. Actually, let's not look at interviews. We'll look at one that's actually got a computed field in it. So applicants. The server side of applicants has got this full name field, which has still got the method for returning the full name. But if I go back and look at the HTML client, that full name field disappears because it's not something we do on the client side. Remember I said that before? And that's where you can see that those things don't change. The other thing is in the HTML client, this is where you can change stuff like what the display name is on your client side, in this particular client, which is not something you could change before either between the various ways of viewing things. That was all done at the back end, but it does allow you to do much more fine grained control over what gets shown. Right. What I might do now is just duck back and have a quick chat about a few more things, and then if we've got time at the end, I'll show another couple of things in the demo. I want to quickly talk about what's happening next. In particular, for those of you who know about Lightswitch, then you'll know in Update 2 of Visual Studio 2012, we had the HTML client and SharePoint apps. We worked OAuth 2.0 in there. I'll talk a bit about Web API a bit later on, and SignalR, both of which are very, very cool things in terms of being able to do Lightswitch applications. The nice thing, as I said, about Lightswitch is it's just a standard web project. And so you can do things like add Web API calls. You can do things like add SignalR, and so you can do real-time updates of your front end based on the SignalR sockets connection. Very, very cool. In the 2013 preview, I've shown you team development. I've shown you how to add database projects. I've shown you all the cool stuff that comes with NuGet. What I haven't shown you, but I can talk about now, is that they automatically we add created by, modified by audit fields to your tables, for example. Yeah. Yeah. Just saying. I agree. pardon me. Coming soon. Which hopefully means in the Visual Studio final. I'm not making promises again, by the way. I don't speak for the team. I speak to the team sometimes, but I don't speak for them. There's a bunch of stuff that's on the way. Now, this is the stuff that Joe Binder announced at Build. Continuous integration. They've already done the continuous integration piece. They haven't shipped it with the 2013 preview. The continuous integration piece is just a process template that allows the build to happen automatically as part of the post process. Pretty neat. Integration of documents directly in. You can currently get at documents in the library through that method that I talked about before with REST calls down to list and so on. But Joe showed off in a build that he had just directly accessing documents in the library as another business type. Very, very cool. And the concept of a person in the Active Directory also just being another business type. And so instead of me having to have that staff table I showed you today, I would just point it at the AD and say, this is the people who could be hiring or firing or part of the interview process. And that's very, very neat. It integrates directly in there and you just say it's a person and this is where the information comes from for the authentication piece. That's really exciting. This is moving more and more to someone else taking care of the plumbing for me, because that's really what I want to happen, the plumbing. Yep.
First of all, when you were creating that model, is it also creating backend support? Like
Okay, so that's an awesome question. Can I ask that first, and then you'll come back to your next question? Or is it, if you've got a follow-on of the same thing? So it's just standard jQuery mobile that's putting that stuff on the screen.
No, I'm talking about automation framework. So
Yeah. So whatever your automation framework is that can go and talk to, do you mean for UI automation?
UI automation, like we write unit as integration.
Yeah.
But for automation, I click here and fill the information. I don't want to do it that manually. I want to do it write automation test for that.
So how do you do that now with jQuery mobile?
UI automation framework,
yeah.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
There are third party
HP tools. But how do you do it right now with other websites? Okay.
So if it's
a standard website, which is exactly what this is, then you can use whatever framework you normally use. That's the beauty, and I don't mean that to be a go and work it out for yourself. I mean it to illustrate the point that the really cool thing about the Lightswitch application and Lightswitch project is it's just a Visual Studio project. In fact, it's just a bunch of Visual Studio projects in a Visual Studio solution, and so you can add whatever other projects you want to add. You can add database projects, you can add SharePoint projects, you can add testing projects, you can add the web API stuff. All of that stuff just comes out of the box because they haven't done anything special. I don't know exactly whether that UI application framework will support it. I'm not going to say yes to that straight away, but what I'm going to say is that if it's a framework that supports standard web standards pages, then it will support it, because that's what that page is. Yeah? That's all it is. And now, in terms of your deployment question around the database stuff.
Yep.
So you're creating an entity framework model, and then the EF stuff is being used to create the database. And then because we've got that database application there, we can run pre and post scripts. We can do a whole bunch of stuff in that as part of that process. Yeah? And that's where that database model, the database project helps you. Because you can then use it to pull in, if you want to, you can use it to pull in reference data. You can use it to create samples if you want. All that stuff is part of that process. And you can run pretty much any T-SQL you like against that database.
So when you were creating the model, it was not creating backend.
So it was creating what they call an intrinsic, so it was a local DB version of it. But it also takes that and uses that to script out the thing later on. So for testing, it's running local DB by default. And then it goes out to run the whatever your backend happens to be, wherever you happen to be hosting it, whether it's on SQL Azure, Azure database, whatever it's called nowadays, or in your local data center somewhere, and you provide it with connection strings when you do actually do the deployment. Yeah. So yes, I think there is, and I don't exactly know the answer to this question, but I did see something just the other day that Beth Massey had posted around upgrading. Come and talk to me afterwards, and we'll do a further investigation. But I'm cautiously optimistic. Are there any more questions while we're here? Yeah. Yep. So if you want to style the UI and make it a whole lot prettier, in fact, not just a little bit, a whole lot prettier than what you've got there, that's an awesome question. Basically, what you do is you go in here and all of your... Oh, sorry, thanks. Excuse me. You go in here, and there's all your scripting. And you go in here, and those are your standard style sheets. And they're all just like that. And in fact... what's the name of the theme roller, the jQuery theme roller? Just knock yourself out. They're all compliant. It's all just jQuery mobile. So, yeah. And then you can go in and change your themes and a whole bunch of other styling like that.
Another question. One of the things I've noticed is that if I get a really big screen, it can look a bit empty.
Yep.
Is there a way that you could load on a bigger screen, kind of load some extra panels if I wanted to do that?
Right. So the question for the recording, more than anything else, is if you've got a big screen, can look a bit empty, how can I load some extra panels? Well, you've got complete control over the post-render stuff if you want to do that manually. But having said that, the Lightswitch guys have done a heap of great work on making screens look less empty, particularly big screens. And they've done a lot of work on scaling fonts properly to make it look a more sensible for the screen size. So I guess both those answer your question. One is a bunch of automatic stuff that's happened, and the second one is that you can do some manual bits. So the question is, can you load a view in pre-render? Do you know, I haven't ever tried that. I can't imagine it would be a problem, but I haven't ever tried it. And so again, we might take that one offline. Yeah, that's a great question. I do like it.
Is this good for custom user controls? Like, for example, from a third party?
Absolutely. So a great question. Is this work with custom user controls? I haven't shown you the demo because I haven't got the bits together yet, but there's a great demo of this. In fact, Joe Binder does this demo in the build version of this talk, where he takes one of the Kendo UI graph controls and links it to a web API call that goes and queries the Lightswitch backend data and does a bunch of aggregation and posts stuff on as a chart. So very, very neat stuff. And yes, all certainly doable. It's just JavaScript, so it's very, very cool. And so you can very in a very straightforward way, take the sample code that the third party vendors provide you, chuck it into your Lightswitch application, and have it render beautifully. It works really, really nicely. Yeah.
Just one stupid question: if we have an existing database schema,
yep.
Can we actually import those schema into Modul?
Absolutely. So the question is: if we have an existing database schema, can we import that instead of making our own database? Essentially, right? Absolutely. And the answer is absolutely yes. If I go back over here. And my data sources, and I choose add data source, it now asks me where I want to go and find my data. And you probably will have seen this screen before. Yeah, this is a standard .NET screen. And I can go and I can talk to a database, which is anything with an EF provider. I can go and talk to SharePoint directly. So it actually uses the SharePoint OData feeds to do that. I can talk to a generic OData service, and I can talk to a WCF RIA service, automatically out of the box. And what's more, one of the really cool things is that Lightswitch, as part of its process, especially if you connect to a database, will automatically expose that database as an OData endpoint. Yeah, so now, and one of the things you can absolutely do is just say, I've got some data I want to expose as OData. Don't even bother publishing a front end for me. Just publish the Lightswitch services over the top of that data. And that's very, very neat. So the question is, where is the boundary between this and ASP.NET, and then you know, further on as well, and maybe native code and all that sort of thing. That's a really blurred line, and the reason it's a blurred line is because you've got to take into account not only the technology itself, which is pretty phenomenal, I have to say, but also the expertise of your people, who's going to be doing the definition of the application itself, who's going to be helping you define all the business objectives. All those kind of things need to be taken into account. And I hate giving that sort of weasel, it depends answer, but it really is. I wouldn't say that there's any way you could define a single line above this size, then it's going to be this, below this size, it's going to be that. It really, it's a fairly fluid thing. Having said that, I think that it's definitely worth having a look at Lightswitch as an initial approach to things, almost always, because especially now, it's a proper Visual Studio first-class citizen, because there's a whole lot of stuff that you can use, a whole lot of Lightswitch goodness you can use in any application. A great example of that is for things like doing table maintenance and those sorts of things at the back end, where even though you might have a really complex enterprise-level ASP.NET application that's already there, if you want to do things like table maintenance, it used to be another whole project to do that. And now you can just point Lightswitch at those tables and say, I want to be able to do this. Here's the authentication and authorization on one of those tables. And away you go, and boom, it's done. Yeah. Do you have a question, Danny? So, cool. All right. More questions? Yeah.
So let's say you do hit the wall and say you want to go to ASP.NET
Lightswitch. Yep. So is there any sort of migration path between Lightswitch and ASP.NET? Yes and no. I guess is the true answer. Yes, in that a bunch of the stuff is already there in terms of being that project. That you can continue to use the services because they're there. The data still live in the database, the back end, apart from anything else, right? So all that stuff there. No, in that the light switch model, the LSM files, don't automatically create, reverse engineerable HTML and JavaScript. Right? That stuff's generated on the fly. So, yes and no. Any more? All right, let's.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
With the document functionality that's coming, that'll have multiple file upload, I presume.
I don't think we've announced any detail about whether we'll have multiple file upload. If there's a standard multiple file upload control, of course you can just chuck it straight in because it's just JavaScript and HTML. That's the beautiful thing. Or it's just. It's just a SharePoint site. Alternatively, you can just shell straight out to wherever your document library is where you want to put that, and that whatever capability that's got, you've got as well. That's the beauty of it. All right, let me. So, folks, I'm gonna point you at a bunch of great cool related content. Visual Studio Light Switch homepage, and these slides are available for download, of course. So all links are there, but msdn.com/lightswitch. The Lightswitch blog is awesome, blogs.msdn.com/lightswitch. Some great articles in that around SharePoint documents, HTML client UI updates, managing databases, using SignalR, and a bunch of the API stuff. Beth Massey is one of the Lightswitch PMs, the community PM for Lightswitch, and she is. I think the word prolific would not be an overstatement in terms of her blogging, and she's a particularly eloquent blogger too. She's put out a great series of getting started videos, but also some really in-depth articles about how Lightswitch works and what's going on behind the scenes. I'm just pulling out one of the community bloggers who's also very prolific, Michael Washington. Does very cool things like this one. This is his most recent post. How do you take PayPal and make that work with Lightswitch? And the neat thing is that because Lightswitch is just an ASP.NET application, then all that stuff is just doable. Another couple of little things. If you want to give feedback about Lightswitch, the team are having a Lightswitch town hall meeting, which basically they're going to show off a few of the new things in Lightswitch, and they're also going to ask for your feedback. Of course, 8 a.m. to 9:30 Pacific time is 1 a.m. Sorry, to 2:30 Australian time. It's East Coast time at the moment. So if you're keen, then you can jump up there. Otherwise, jump on the Lightswitch forums. They are very, very active and very well monitored by the Lightswitch team. If you have general questions, that's in one of the fora. And the extensibility stuff, which I haven't talked about at all, but is very, very cool in Lightswitch. Those things like those business types that I talked about before are one of the extension points in Lightswitch. So you can write your own business types that instead of just doing telephone number, there might be invoice number or ISBN or all kinds of things that you might want to validate automatically as part of your process. That's the extensibility piece. Yes, please do fill out your evaluations. I love to hear about those things. I usually say the evals, the numbers are for my boss and the comments are for me, but turns out this year there are no comments. So sorry about that. We might try and get that fixed for next year. Finally, the standard stuff there. A note about this afternoon. I strongly encourage you to hang around for the lock note piece. If you were considering whether to go or not go, Scott Guthrie is always interesting in terms of what he's got to talk about. I'm looking forward to it a great deal, it should be finished by 4:15 at the very latest. So most people have time to get down to aeroplanes. So if you were tossing up whether to go to the lock note, my personal recommendation is be there. Folks, thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed this, and I look forward to hearing what you do about Lightswitch.